Beruchim Abbaim, ladies. We have a very special Shabbat. This Shabbat is very significant for a few reasons. First of all, we finished the book of Shemot, which is a great accomplishment. We read the last parasha in Shemot. The custom is at the end of a book we say Chazak, which is a Shabbat that gives us strength. It's a Shabbat of Chizuk. Everybody needs Chizuk, everybody needs strength, and everybody needs comfort. So whenever we have a Shabbat of Chazak, it's good. We ended the parasha and we get the blessing of Chazak, Chazak, v'nit Chazek. That God gives us extra strength to continue on to Vayikra and to Bamidbar and to the other Sefarim. So it's significant in that. It's also an important Shabbat because we announce Rosh Chodesh Adar, the second Adar. Adar is the most auspicious month of the year. Mishenichnas Adar marvim b'simcha. That when the month of Adar enters, specifically the second Adar, which is this year, we have two Adarim, it's a great time of good luck for the Jewish people and good fortune. The Gemara says that if anybody has a court case or legal proceedings, they should schedule it in Adar, when the month is very good, where our mazal is very high. So we're excited as well. We're announcing that the month of Adar is upon us. That means Purim is only a few weeks away after that. And from then, it's only a month from Pesach. So we look forward to these great special days. But there's a third reason why the Shabbat is very significant. And that is because it's the first of four special Shabbatot. We take out two Sefrei Torah on Shabbat. One, of course, we read Parashat HaShavua, Pekudeh. The second is called Shekalim. And the Shabbat is called Shabbat Shekalim. And we always read this subject, always the Shabbat before the beginning of Adar. Before I say the Hiddush that I want to tell you today, I just need to give you a simple interpretation. We cannot say something deep if we don't understand the alphabet, the basics. What is Shekalim? What is the meaning of Shekalim? In the olden days, when we had the Mishkan, which we talked about a lot, the tabernacle, the temporary structure that was with the Jewish people in the desert, in the Midbar, so the Jewish people needed to pay every year a half a shekel, it's a small coin, half a shekel, 50 cent piece. And what was the purpose? What did they do with the money? The money went to pay for the sacrifices. The Beit HaMikdash, the Mishkan needs maintenance. It cost money to run the Beit HaMikdash. Every day they brought sacrifices. Who paid for them? So the people paid for them. There was a mandatory tax. Every year in this month of Adar, everybody would have to chip in a half a coin. It wasn't expensive. And with that money, they would put it in the bank, and they would use that money to fund the temple for the fiscal year. The fiscal year of the Mishkan begins in Nisan. It goes from Nisan to Nisan. So they would collect the money a month before, open up a new account, and anytime they needed to pay for sacrifices, for wine, for flour, for oil, they would use that money. And they would collect a lot of money. If everybody's giving a half a shekel, the Gemara says, Piruta, Piruta, Lechashbon Gadol Mitztaref. Even though on its own it's a small amount, but when everybody kicks in a small amount, it becomes a big amount. So we read the parasha this week to commemorate what they used to do. See, we don't do that anymore. There's no Mishkan, there's no sacrifices, there's no mandatory tax. So we feel bad. So we read the parasha, at least from the scroll, from the Torah, and God considers it, when we read it, as if we did it. It's a great thing. There's two ways to do a mitzvah. One way is to actually do it, and one way is to wish you could do it, but you could, but it's out of our control. So God says, you know what, if you really wish to do it, all I ask of you is read it from the Torah on Shabbat, and I'll give you credit as if you gave the hefer sheker. Good, so that's as best as we can do. There was another collection that we're going to read about on Shabbat. It was also a hefer sheker. They collected one time. It was a one-time fee. Where they collected this half a coin in order to count the Jewish people. You see, we're not allowed to count Jews. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So what they did was, how did they make the census in the olden days? Everybody gave a half a coin and they counted the coins. Again, that was a one-time item. And then they gave the coins to Tzedakah. But on Shabbat we read yet of another collection of a half a coin. There were three half coin, half a shekel donations made. One was a yearly one that I told you about, the maintenance. That was every year. One was the census to count the people. But I came today to talk to you about the third half a shekel that was discussed. And that was to pay for the construction of the Mishkan. The Mishkan was a public synagogue, basically. It was a public tabernacle. It belonged to everybody. It doesn't belong to one person. So it was built by donations, just like we build our synagogues today. The synagogue is not owned by one person. We go around and we collect, and everybody chips in a little, and the synagogue becomes a property of the sigur, a property of the congregation. So it says that they went around collecting for the Mishkan. It says the rich people gave more. The poor people gave less. And some people didn't give anything. But they're included. God knows their intention. And it paid for everything. It paid for the gold menorah. It paid for the mizbeach, for the altar. It paid for the table. It paid for all the different skins that they used as a roof to cover the Mishkan. It's an expensive proposition. But they collected a lot of money. So much money that they even had a surplus. That never happened again in history. There's never enough money. But in those days, Moshe Rabbeinu made an announcement. We have enough. I'm not a prophet, but I guarantee you that'll never happen. That a rabbi will get up and say, we don't need any more money. It's unfortunate, we need money. Yeah, but I don't mean it. So what was the half a shekel then? If they collected so much money for the Mishkan, what was this extra third half a shekel that they gave? Everything was paid for. No. I wish I have a picture book in my office. It's okay. I'll explain it to you by visual, with my hands. They had in the Mishkan, kerashim. Kerashim were poles. The Mishkan was made up of poles. Many poles that were formed a wall. So the Kohen would enter these poles, was open on one side, so he can enter and bring the sacrifices. It's like a sukkah where you have walls. So instead of having walls, you had poles. But the poles on the bottom of them came out of the poles two pegs. Now, you cannot hold put it on the ground because it's going to be shaky. There's two pegs coming out. Here's the pole, and you imagine you have two, like a fork. You have two pieces of wood coming out over here. If you're going to put it on the ground, it's going to teeter. It's not going to be able to stay. So what they did was, they had what's called adanim. What is adanim? An adan is a socket. Look at this box. It's a perfect example. They had the box, let's say, like this. It looked like a rectangle. It was made out of silver. And it had a hole in it. And they would take two sockets, two adanim, put them next to each other. And now you have two holes. And they would take the pole and they would stick it in. Click. And it clicks into the adan. And now it was flat. Now it has a foundation. Almost like when we build our sukkot, we put a brace underneath the wall so it doesn't shake. So it was like a brace. They would stick the pole into every pole, would get two sockets. I'll tell you why it's like that. They didn't want to make one socket with two holes in it. They make two separate ones, one hole, they stick it underneath, click, and then they do it for the next one, and so on and so forth. Where did they get the silver to pay for these sockets, for these adanim? That came from the half shekel donation. And everybody had to donate. And I find it perplexing. When it came to all the other furniture of the Mishkan, it was voluntary. You want to donate? You could donate a lot. You want to give $1 million? Baruch Abba. You want to give a penny? Baruch Abba. You want to give nothing? Baruch Abba. But when it comes to the sockets, the adanim, everybody had to be part of it. Everybody had to give half a shekel. And with those, the half a shekel was silver. They melted down the silver and they made the sockets out of it. Why did everybody have to be part of the adanim? And why was it a half a shekel? Why not give a whole? This is the two questions that I ask you today. It's easy questions. It's an easy class. I'll answer the questions and then I'll bid you farewell and you can have a good day. Why a half a shekel, and why did everybody have to donate? You know what, if it was up to me, I would say the most important piece of the Beit HaMikdash, of the Mishkan, was the Aron, the Ark. That's where the Torah was. I would say everybody has to be part of the Aron. The Torah is the main item. They said, no, the Aron, collect, whoever gives, gives, whoever doesn't give, it's okay. But the base, the sockets, or the Adalim, mandatory half shekel tax. I ask you again, what is so special about the adanim? I don't even know, if you were to ask me, Rabbi, tell me the most important vessels in the Mishkan, I would tell you, well, you have a menorah, very important. You have the table with the showbread on it, very important. I would tell you, you have altars, Mizbeach Haitzon, Mizbeach HaPinimi, you have cherubs, you have so much important pieces of furniture. I think the last thing I would tell you is, oh yeah, you have sockets. Who cares about the sockets? It's you need it. I'm not saying it's not functional. I'm not saying it's like, you're right, without it, the Mishkan is a weeble wobble. But is that the most important item? It's not like you weren't any sacrifices on it. It's not like you, it's not a Sefer Torah. And the Torah says, oh, this item deserves everybody's participation, and everybody must chip in. Nazita shekel. Okay, don't attack me, don't attack. Okay, I'm going to answer. We're going to answer you. Watch. It's good, you're excited about the learning. I'm just joking. The answer is like this. There was a great prophet in the Jewish nation called Habakkuk. The people came to Habakkuk and they said, Rabbi, prophet, there's so many mitzvot in the Torah, there's 613 mitzvot. It's so great, our Torah. Do you have an advice for us to make it easy to serve God? Maybe you have a certain trick or an idea to make the service of God easier. Because that's such a daunting task to keep the 613 mitzvot. So Habakkuk said, yes, I'm going to give you an advice. If you listen to my advice, then you'll be able to build a religion on a strong foundation. And he said, it says, Ba Habakkuk came along, Ve'amidan al-Ahad, and he established the religion on one principle. He said, the tzaddik be'emunato yichyeh. He said the tzaddik lives through his emunah, through his faith and trust in God. And he said, that's the whole foundation of Judaism. If you have emunah, then you're able to build mitzvot, religious life, and everything else. But without faith and trust in God, your foundation is very weak. It's only a matter of time where you'll give up the mitzvot and you'll give up the religion And therefore he said the main thing you have to work on first is to build the foundation. And the deeper the foundation of emunah is in God, the higher building you'll be able to build of religion. But if your emunah is weak, if your emunah is shaky, then already the religion that's on top of it is very, very risky, and there's a chance for it to topple. This is the foundation of Judaism. Our rabbis tell us that the Mishkan had so many pieces. Every single piece of the Mishkan represents another mitzvah. I cannot go through all the pieces of the Mishkan now. But let's say there's 613 pieces of the Mishkan. Every piece represents another mitzvah. Which piece of the Mishkan do you think represents emunah? Adanim. Of course, because that's the base. The whole Mishkan, with all its tonnage, is resting on what? On these sockets. Without these sockets, the whole Mishkan comes down. And therefore the Adanim represent the emunah, the trust and the faith in God. You see, in Judaism, you have some people that are a little more observant, that are a little more meticulous in their mitzvot. Some people a little less. Some people don't get an opportunity to do mitzvot. But the minimum requirement of every Jew is to have emunah. For him to be considered at least part of Judaism, he has to have emunah. Observance fluctuates. Some have more, some have less. Some are more careful, some are less. So you can't tell everybody to be equal in the Aron. The Aron represents observance. Not everybody's equal in observance. So you can't tell everybody you have to give a half a shekel because you're not equal. Some are more, some are less. But when it comes to the emunah, no Jew can come along and say, well, I don't have emunah, not for me. Impossible. There at the base of the religion, at the yesod, at the foundation, every Jew must participate. When I talk about emunah, I talk on all levels of emunah. The belief in God. Now I understand I'm not talking to atheists over here. Nor am I talking to agnostics. Of course all of us believe in God. But obviously the rabbis didn't take it for granted when they established that every single day we must say Shema Yisrael, Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad, and we must say it, according to some opinions, four times a day. Do you know the men, before Shacharit they say Shema Yisrael, during Shacharit they say Shema Yisrael, during Arbit, Shema Yisrael, and before we go to sleep we say Shema Yisrael. So, as much as we know that there's God and we believe in God, the rabbis didn't take it for granted. We had to announce it and proclaim it that God is one and there's no other power and there's no other forces, not black magic, not witchcraft, not any sorts of astrology or all these types of energies, not any of this voodooism. Even in the name of religion, there's no such thing as these things. There's only God. We put our faith in Borei Olam. Oh, God is one. There's only one Hashem. We don't believe in false prophets, like some religions believe in. We don't believe in a mother and a father and a son and all this other stuff, the trilogy as they call it, Chas v'Shalom. Ani Rishon v'Ani Acharon, u'Me'Bal Adai En Elohim. God says, I am the first and I am the last. Ani Rishon She'en Li Av, that I don't have a father. Nobody preceded me. V'Ani Acharon She'en Li Ben, I don't have a son. Nobody is going to succeed me. God is the first, nobody comes before Him, and God is the last, nobody comes after Him. Not as they say, Son of God, these type of things. Our belief is in the oneness. Yes, we had prophets, but we don't believe in the prophets as God. The prophet is a prophet and God is God. وَيَأَمِينُوا بَدُنَانُ وَمُشَيْ عَبْدُهُ. There's two things said in that pasuk. The Jewish people believed in God, and they believed that Moshe was only the slave of God. God, Moshe was only a servant. That's also to believe. Vayaminu b'Adonai u'Moshe abdo, and Moshe was only Eved. They didn't put Moshe higher than what he was, although he was the most loyal servant, but he was an Eved, albeit. There was a young boy, they call him the Baal Shem Michelstadt. He was a young child prodigy. He was so smart. 7 or 8 years old. The king wanted to test his knowledge of this young tzaddik. So the king told the little boy, at 3 o'clock on this date, I want you to come to my palace. But I'm not going to tell you which room I'm in. There's 1,000 rooms in the palace. You have to figure it out yourself if you're so smart. He said, okay, 3 o'clock, I'll be there. 2:45, he comes to the courtyard. He's looking at the windows of the palace. How's he going to figure out which room the king is in? He looks, he looks, he looks. He says, ah, perfect. He starts walking up. He goes this way. He goes, makes a right, makes a left. Blah, blah. He waits another minute, 3 o'clock. Boom, he knocks on the door. The king opens up and says, I can't believe it. How did you figure it out? How did you know where I was? He said, well, I think the king made a mistake. You gave it away. He said, why, what did I do? He said, when I was standing in the courtyard, I was looking at all the windows, and all the windows, the shades were drawn. There was one window that the shades were open. So I said, for sure, the king must be in that room over there with his. And so I figured it out. Up the way, this way, to the right, to the left, to the right. So I figured it out, and I came in. He says, you got me, it's my mistake. He said, but if I didn't do that, if I didn't put that mistake, how would you have found me? He said, well, I probably would have asked some of the servants that are in the palace where the king is. He said, oh, that's very smart. He said, but if, let's say, some of the servants would tell you that I'm in one room, and some of the servants would tell you I'm in another room, what would you do then? He says, well, then I would follow the majority, because our Torah says that you have to follow the majority rules. So the king says, aha, I caught you. He says, we are the majority religion in the world. The Christians, they were. And you're the minority. And you just said that in Judaism you have to follow the majority. And you just said if you didn't know where the king was, you'd ask and you'd follow the majority. Therefore you should become Christian like us. And the little boy, the Baal Shem Michelstadt, started laughing. He says, what are you laughing? He says, my dear king, now that I know where you are, even if a million servants would tell me you're somewhere else, I wouldn't listen to them. We only follow the majority when we have a doubt. But when we know something, then we don't follow the majority. We don't follow God because we have a doubt that we have to follow something else. We know it. We found the truth already. Once you find the truth, you don't need to go now after the majority. Majority only says, I don't know if it came from a kosher store or a not kosher store. So I say the majority, the stores are kosher, go after the majority. Something like that, where I don't know. But if I know clearly the piece of meat came from a non-kosher place, I say, I'll go after the majority, I know what it is. He's not, you got me. That's the simple emunah, the basic emunah that we're mandated to have in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That even though the majority of the world is not Jewish, the majority of the world, they worship Buddhism and the other Eastern religions, and then the religions of the Middle East, and then the religions of the West. We're in the minority. But nonetheless, the Adanim represent the basis of Judaism. Faith. Faith that there's a God. There's a God that created the world. The world didn't just come into by mistake. And God doesn't have an extended family. He is one. One means one. And if any Jew thinks that no, God is one and he has also, Hasb Shalom, this is considered defection of Judaism. This is considered like a person becomes a goy. In Hebrew they call that apikoros. That anybody comes and gives God a partner and says he has help. Even the angels, they're not God. The angels are creations of God. Good. That's the simple understanding of Emunah. Shema Yisrael, Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad. God is one. But there's another Emunah that is a higher level of Emunah. Once I believe that God is one, and God is the only force, and God is the creator, I must also believe that God is watching me, and God knows exactly what I'm doing, and God knows the activities of mankind, even though he's very high up. But he knows everything. And he's managing and micromanaging the whole entire world, and his finger is on everything. He didn't just leave the world on autopilot. I said, you know what, I'm too busy dealing with the important things of Shamayim, put it on cruise control, and let's see what happens. Chas v'shalom. God doesn't run the world like a roll of the dice. They just roll dice and whatever happens, happens. Everything that happens in the world is from Borei Olam. There's no chance, there's no mikre. Like the Ramban says at the end of Parashat Bo. Every single thing is from the Hashkaha. From the biggest things to the smallest things, God is behind it. This you must believe. You see, a person can believe, I believe there's one God, but I don't know, he's up there in the heavens doing business something. He doesn't want to deal with me. He's, dealing with world war, and dealing with, world hunger, and major issues. He doesn't care about my small little issue that I have. No, you're wrong. Part of the Emunah is to believe that a Kadosh Baruch Hu is intimately involved in every single aspect. I told you once that the Baal Shem Tov said, you know what Emunah means? That when you're driving on the parkway and there's a truck in front of you that has bales of hay. Sometimes you see they have hay in the truck. And they're going 50, 60 miles an hour on the parkway, and all of a sudden you see one little straw, piece of hay, fall out of the bundle, and you see it just waving in the air, and it falls and lands in a certain spot. You must believe that that has the will of Hashem, wanted that to happen. For some reason, that little piece of straw had to fall at that spot and land in this place. Why? It's not my business to know why, but Hashem willed it. And when you see a leaf fall off a tree, and you see it land in a certain spot, that's the will of Hashem also. Nothing happens by chance or by coincidence. Now, if a Kadosh Baruch Hu is micromanaging a piece of straw and a leaf on a tree, of course, human beings, which is the main part of the creation, called Sheken, all the more so he's worried about us. But now we go to the higher level of Emunah. I'm going slow with you. First, there's one God. There's no problem. It's good. And Hashem knows what I'm doing and what I'm thinking, and he's involved in everything I do. But here's the greatest challenge of Emunah. The challenge of Emunah is when I don't understand what God is doing. You see, it doesn't bother me to believe in one God. And you want to tell me God is involved in my life? I also accept it. And you want to tell me when the leaf falls on the floor, that God did it? Doesn't hurt me. I believe that also. But once you start showing me things that don't make sense to me, now already my Emunah is challenged. You see, if you show me somebody that's very religious, and he's a Saddiq, and he goes to shul every day, and he gives a lot of tzedakah, and he has a perfect life, I say, yeah, this makes sense to me. I have Emunah. God is great. It makes sense to me. This is the way it should be. Good things should happen to good people, and bad things should happen to bad people. And that's it. It's a simple arithmetic. It's algebra. And then we come into the world and we don't see anything resembling this. What I just told you is like you read in the fairy tales sometimes. But when you get to the real world that we live in, you see quite the opposite. Although you see Saddiqeen benefit sometimes, and you see wicked suffer, but there's many cases where we see that the good seemingly get a raw deal of life. And we see the wicked prosper. Oh, and now the challenge of Emunah begins. Tell me one God, I believe. What else you want to tell me?
That he knows what you're doing? Okay, it doesn't hurt me to believe that also. What else you want to tell me? Leaves? Big deal, leaves doesn't affect me. What else you want to tell me? That you're going to do mitzvot and you're going to have a great life? I accept. But now I'm going to tell you there's another level of emunah. That you're going to do everything good, that you're going to do everything right, and there's not going to be so easy sometimes. Good morning. Now begins emunah. You don't begin working on your muscle of emunah until you have questions on what is God doing. And at that point, the emunah is supposed to tell you that Hashem knows what He's doing. And even though I don't understand it and I don't see it, there's a reason and there's a logic. And I'll explain it to you. I didn't say I'm going to answer it to you. I'm going to explain it to you. Hashem knows what He's doing. You see, the world didn't start this morning or yesterday or 100 years ago. The world started 5,771 years ago. I know if you go to the science fair, they're going to tell you the world is 150 million years old. I once heard that when they went on the trip, Rabbi Diamond took the girls in the school to a trip to Disney World for the graduation or whatever it was. So the tour guide in Disney World is telling them, in one of the places, maybe Epcot, wherever it was, and the tour guide saying, and the world's 178 billion years old. So Rabbi Diamond told him, just tell us about the last 5,700 years. Skip on. We don't have time for 100 billion years. Give us the last 5,700. He didn't want the girls to, Chas v'Shalom, think that it's true. The world didn't begin with us, and the world doesn't end with us. The world goes on for 6,000 years. And when we come into the world, we're coming into a world that preceded us. There was a history before us, and there's history after us. And therefore, we never get to see a full picture. We're only witnessing what we know in the present. But we do not have the advantage of retrospect of the past. And we do not have the advantage of future because we're not prophets. So how in the world do we think we can understand something when we don't see a full picture? You know what it's like? There's a pasuk. There's a pasuk in the Tehillim. I heard this on Machan Baruch. Al Hashanah. We say in the Tehillim, you know this pasuk. Shomer Adonai et kol ohavav ve'et kol resha'im yashmid. What does the pasuk say? Shomer Adonai et kol ohavav. God protects all those that love Him. Ve'et kol resha'im, and all the wicked people, yashmid. He destroys. That's the pasuk says. So he says, one time a fellow walked into shul late. So he missed the first part. He didn't hear Shomer Hashem. He hears the Adhan say, Et kol ohavav ve'et kol resha'im yashmid. All those that love God and all the resha'im, God destroys. He says, hey, what kind of religion is this over here? What is it worth it if God's going to destroy everybody? He didn't hear the full pasuk. Another guy, he walked in on time, but he left early. He hears the Adhan say, Shomer Adonai et kol ohavav ve'et kol resha'im. And then he walked out. He says, God watches over all the ones that love Him and all the Rishayim also. He's a beautiful Abi Rasha. This guy left early. This guy came late. You didn't hear the whole pasuk. So you're not able to put the pasuk in context. He says, the same thing in life. We come in the middle of the pasuk, but you didn't read the first 5,700 years of the pasuk. And you left in the middle of the pasuk. It's impossible to understand it in totality when you're only seeing part of a picture. There was a boy. He lived in the city, the son of wealthy people. Every morning his servant would bring him bread on a silver platter, hot, fresh bread. The boy is so spoiled, he has no idea where bread comes from. He just knows they give him bread every morning. For all he knows, the bread grows on the trees. He has no idea. One day, when he's in his house, there's a big mansion, he stumbles into the maid's quarters, and he gets into the kitchen. and he sees there's a big bowl with kernels. He tells the maid, what is these kernels over here? He says, oh, this is wheat kernels. You know, the bread you eat every morning, this is how we make the bread. He says, oh, wow, amazing. This looks nothing like the bread. He says, what? Stay over here, we're going to give you a lesson. And they take the wheat kernel, they grind it, and they make it into flour, and they add the water, and they make a dough, and they put it in the oven. He says, I can't believe such a thing. Now he finally understands how they make bread. When he got a little older, he went out of the city, and he got to a farm. He never saw a farm before. He lives in a big building. He doesn't know what farm is. He tells the farmer, you mind if I observe you for a few days? This is new to me, such a big field like this, such a life. We don't live like this where we come from. He says, of course, Baruch Abba, you could, but please don't interrupt me. I can't answer questions. You could watch me and observe, but you know, I'm busy. Okay. The boy wakes up the next morning at 5 o'clock. He hears noise in the morning. 5 o'clock in the morning, what's going on? 5 o'clock in the morning. He sees the farmer's outside on a tractor and he's plowing the ground. And the kid doesn't understand what plowing means. He said, what is he doing with the perfectly beautiful ground? He's making holes in the ground. He's making furrows in the ground. He has a machine that's destroying the ground. He got up 5 in the morning to destroy the ground. It's crazy, ridiculous. He said, but I don't want to interrupt the guy. He says, I can't ask any questions. He said, but this is what the farming do. They have nothing better to do than destroy the ground. After he finished the plowing, the farmer goes into the room and he has a big bowl. The kid says, I know this, the wheat kernels. The maid showed me that. These are the wheat kernels. And the farmer takes the wheat kernels and walks into the newly plowed field and starts throwing them in the field. He's throwing them. The kid says, Shemayim, this is the source of life. This is what we make flour to make dough. And the guy's taking them and he's throwing them into the dirt. The crazy people, these farmers are crazy people. He couldn't, he's like, I cannot stay anymore. I have to leave. Either it's contagious, I'm going to become crazy like this guy. Then he says to himself, wait a little longer. Maybe you'll learn something. All of a sudden, 2 weeks later, he sees beautiful stalks coming out of the ground. He doesn't know that they're wheat. He just sees beautiful stalks. Ever see a wheat field? It's beautiful. He says, my gosh. Now I understand what he was doing. What a beautiful field. Look how gorgeous. What a scene. And he's just staring at the window looking at the beautiful stalks of wheat. The brown stalks of wheat. Gorgeous. He says, okay, maybe he didn't like to look at the empty ground. He wants to look at the field of wheat. It's very nice. Oh, I understand. The next morning at 5 a.m., he wakes up and he sees the guy outside, his friend, with a sickle in his hand. Sickle's like a knife. Shoom, and he's cutting all the wheat. He's He finally got the wheat. It's beautiful. Now he's destroying it. All the work to do what? To go back to where he was. And the farmer says, wait, I'm not finished. Then he takes all the bundles of wheat, and now he starts threshing them. I'll tell you what they do with the wheat. In the stalks, inside is the kernel. How do they get the kernel out? They bang it. They hit it, and it cracks open, and the kernel comes out. Now he's taking bats, baking the wheat. The guy's crazy. First he cuts it. He's doing the Adbami Tot Bedin on the wheat. Crazy guy. And then after now he has all the broken wheat that he beat up. He takes the wheat and he throws it in the air. And it says all the chaff, all the light parts blow away in the wind. And what remains on the ground? The heavy kernel. And all of a sudden the kid sees thousands and hundreds of thousands of kernels. He says, where did you get all these kernels from? He says, don't you understand? I put 50 kernels in the ground. And the ground gave me back 50,000 kernels. This is how we make wheat kernels. He said, if I didn't stay for the whole process, I would think you're crazy. But now that I see exactly the process from beginning to end, now I know it. There's a logic to it. And that's the mashal that they say to this world. We see HaKadosh Baruch Hu plow. We say, what is he doing? And we see him take the tzaddikim and he scatters them all over the place. What is he doing? Then we see him thresh the tzaddikim, he's hitting, beating the tzaddikim. And we don't understand what God's doing. That's where Emunah comes in. You can't come in when the pasuk started already or leave before the pasuk ends. And it's impossible because nobody lives forever. So it's very difficult for us to make a judgment on something that we do not know the full story. Did you ever hear? You ladies go to classes all day, I'm sure you heard when the rabbis talk about you have to give the benefit of the doubt. They say if you see somebody do something strange, give them the benefit of their doubt. Even if it's very far-fetched, you should learn to give the benefit of the doubt. So don't you think you have to give the benefit of the doubt to God? If I have to give a benefit of the doubt to a human being, to a mortal person who makes sins, when I see something that my God does, and I don't understand, I don't comprehend it, I don't understand why is this happening, shouldn't I give him the benefit of the doubt? That maybe something happened before me, or something happened after me, and I don't understand, I don't have the full picture. There's a famous episode in Jewish history. The Asara Harugei Malchut, the 10 rabbis that were murdered, brutally murdered by the Romans. This was a very sad part of history. Rabbi Akiva was amongst them. Rabbi Hananya ben Tadion, Hospita Miturgeman, the greatest Sadiqim, but they didn't just kill them. As if the Romans, they were such bad people, such cruel people, they figured out methods of torture, and they did 10 rabbis in a row. But not just 10 rabbis, the 10 greatest rabbis that our religion ever produced. Rabbi Akiva on top of all of them. And it says when God was doing that, it's an amazing story. When God was doing that, the angels came to God and said, Borei Olam, what are you doing? These are tzaddikim. God answered the angels, if you want, I'll take the world back to the way it was on day one, tohu valohu. You want me to bring the world back to its original? I'll destroy the whole world. The angels backed off. This is a very hard conversation to understand, this dialogue. The angels were asking a good question. God, what are you doing? And God as if curses them. Ah, you want to ask questions like this? I'll bring the world back to the way it was on day one. You don't want to answer, tell them, listen, not now, I don't want to answer you. Don't ask questions. Well, what kind of answer is that? If somebody asks me a question, Rabbi, can you explain to me why God does this? Ah, you ask me this question? If you ask me that question, I'll bring you back to... What are you cursing me for? Just tell me, Rabbi, I don't want to answer you. Unless that was the answer. How could that be the answer? What kind of answer is that? They're asking, why are you doing this in the Tzaddikim? What is God's answer? There was a king. There was a king. And the king had an expert tailor that made him custom-made clothes. He was a Jewish tailor, but he was perfect. He was meticulous. He made him the best suits. They fit perfectly, and the feeling was good. The king would give him the material, and he would fashion it. And the king loved this guy. He wouldn't wear a suit unless this man had his hands on it. Well, you're lucky you came to the class. Watch. So what happened? The Goyim, they get jealous of the Jewish people. So they go to the king, and they tell the king, this Jewish tailor, he's a crook. Why is he a crook? He says, you're giving him materials? He's stealing half the materials for himself, and he puts synthetic stuff in there for you. He's not, can't be. He's an honest guy. He's not honest. He's doing this the whole time. The king eventually believed all these rumors, and he told the Jewish tailor, you're guilty. Death penalty. The Jew said, for what? He said, because you're stealing some of the materials for yourself. This is royal cloth. This is very special silk. He said, but it's not true. No, it's not true. I have so many reports already. He said, but it's false. They take him out to be hung. They're about to hang him. The king says, wait. He gets one last wish. That's the minhag. One last wish. He says, yes, I have one last wish. Bring me the last suit that I made for the king. I want to feel it. That's what you want to do for the last wish? Yes. They bring him the suit, and he stands there with his own bare hands. He starts to take apart the suit. Stitch by stitch, button by button. He takes out the shoulder pads. He takes out all the different materials, and he starts to lay them out on the table. He says, my dear king, here's the entire suit. Show me what I stole. Every stitch, every button is accounted for. When you're wearing the suit as a whole, you don't know. He says, here, he unraveled the whole suit. He says, look, did I take anything? The king looked and said, you're right, you didn't take anything. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was telling the angels, you want me to unravel the whole entire world so you can see how everything makes sense? You want me to unravel the whole suit so everything can be clear to you? The only way you can understand what I'm doing to these 10 tzaddikim, let me unravel the whole world from Adam HaRishon to now. Let me put everything out in front of you in full display. Then you'll see, this happened because of this, and this happened because of this, and then you'll see everything happening. If you're not willing to let me show you the whole story, then you cannot ask me on an individual episode. You cannot ask me on an isolated case, as bad as it is. But this is part of a big story. If I unravel the entire suit in front of you, you'll see that everything is emet, that everything works out. We cannot even begin to understand the ways of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. They're too deep. They're too deep for us. I recently read, this is just as an example, to show you how much goes on in the world that we have no idea what's going on. There's a great rabbi called Hasadeh. Hasadeh was a great Kabbalist. Harav Shaul Dweck HaKohen. Hasadeh, Rashi Tevot, Harav Shaul Dweck HaKohen. Hasadeh, they called him. He was a great Mekubal. He writes, it's amazing. I don't know how he knows what he's saying, but this is what he writes. And we need big rabbis to explain it. I'm just giving it to you the way I saw it. He says, when those 10 rabbis died and gave their lives up, the Jewish people lived in their zechut for 2,000 years almost. That zechut of giving up their life in such a way, all the generations after had great beracha because of that sacrifice. The Jewish people exist on that Mesirut Nefesh. And he says that every one of those great rabbis was so holy that he's like the whole Jewish nation. Each rabbi was like 600,000 Jews. And therefore all the Jewish nation lived in their zechut. And then he writes, but their zechut ended in 1940. He says, that's it, the zechut ended. And then he goes on to explain, from the things that are so beyond us, that we lost the 10 tzaddikim, that each one was worth 600,000 Jews. And now you needed to keep Am Yisrael in existence, so you needed another 10 tzaddikim. But we don't have 10 tzaddikim on that caliber. And right after 1940 started one of the greatest human tragedies in history. Not 10 tzaddikim, but 6 million. And then the nation continues to exist. So do we ever think that what happened in 1940 is connected to the 10 rabbis of BCE? We have no idea. And even after what I told you, it still doesn't make any sense to us. But already you see, whoa, we started to unravel the suit. And you start to see this stitch over here is connected to the other stitch on the other side. There's so many things that are connected over here. Listen to what I'm going to tell you. Part of Emunah is to recognize that you only know half the story. At most. That you don't know all the facts. And therefore you cannot question it until you get the second part of the story, until you get all the facts, then you could make the proper assessment. And therefore God says, when you build the adanim, when you build the bases, these sockets, you have to collect half a shekel. Because the half a shekel represents the mitzvah of emunah. Emunah means you have to accept that you only know half the amount of information. At most, you don't know the whole story. Where's the other half a shekel? God's holding the other half a shekel. In 120 years, God will bring the other half a shekel and complete this. Oh, now I understand it. So that's the main lesson of Emunah and the half a shekel. There was a lady, they brought her a Chinese newspaper. She doesn't know how to read Chinese. So she's going to look at the pictures. She knows how to look at pictures in Chinese. So she's looking at the pictures in the newspaper. She's going through every page. All of a sudden she starts to cry. Oh my gosh, what a tragedy. Oh, she's crying. Now what happened? There's a cruise ship of 1,000 people in the ocean. And it's sunk. And they're all sinking. So the Chinese guy says, let me see what's going on. Says, no, you're holding it upside down. They're not sinking. It's a cruise ship in the water. Everybody's laughing. Everybody's happy. She's holding the newspaper upside down. She thought everybody's sinking. She's crying. When we come into the world, we're looking at the world upside down. We don't know how to read it. So it looks like it's upside down. It's a topsy-turvy world. Listen, why he did this and he suffered and this happened to him and I'm a tzaddik and why should this do to... It doesn't make any sense. At the end, he's going to come and say, you're reading Chinese newspaper upside down. Look at it this way. He said, oh. Much better. That's the Mahasita Shekel. I'm going to conclude. Because there's much more to say in the Inyan of Emunah. We have to talk about Emunah every day. The reason why I believe is because I speak about Emunah. If you don't speak about Emunah, you will not have Emunah. But I want to tell you what one of the students of Rabbeinu Ha'ari said. God has a name of mercy. The name of mercy of God is Yud Ke Vav Ke. We say Havaya, Yud Ke Vav Ke. Like you see it all over. You see Yud Ke Vav Ke all over the shul. Yeah, Yud Ke Vav Ke. Right over there. Whenever you see that name, it's mercy. But it says in the books that in this world, until Mashiach comes, God's name is incomplete. His name is only Yud Ke. When Mashiach comes, then the Vavke will be added. What do they mean when they're saying that? They're trying to say that you're only seeing half of the God's mercy. You cannot see the full effect of God's mercy. We only see the mercy when it makes sense to us. We only see the goodness when we can understand it. But we don't understand the second part. The Yudke Vavke is only Yudke now. Yudke Vavke stands for a pasuk. Yismehu Hashamayim v'tagel ha'aris. You ever hear that pasuk? Yismehu Hashamayim v'tagel ha'aris. The heavens will be happy. Yismehu Hashamayim v'tagel ha'aris. And the earth will rejoice as well. Until Mashiach comes, it's only Yismehu Hashamayim. The heavens are rejoicing because they know everything is good. But on earth they're not rejoicing. The Vav is missing. That's why we say in the Kaddish, Yitkadal v'yitkadash Shemeh Rabbah. What is Shemeh Rabbah? Your name should become great. Shemeh is Shem Yah. The name Yah should become Rabbah. Should become great. Meaning the Yutke should become big. You should add Vavke. We want the world to get to the level that not only the Simcha is going to be in the Yismehu Hashamayim. It should be v'tagel ha'aretz. We should also rejoice in what God's doing. We also want to understand God's ways. But until that point, it's half. Listen to what the student of the Arizal said. They call him the Siftei Kohen. This is important information, just for your own minds to know what I'm going to tell you. In the Hebrew alphabet, there's many ways we could study the alphabet. We could study the alphabet forwards, Aleph, Bet, Gimel, Dalet, Hev, Vav, which teaches us lessons. We can study the alphabet backwards. Tav, Shin, Resh, Kof, etc. And there's another way to study the alphabet. It's called Atbash. Don't get nervous. Atbash is very simple. For the letter Aleph, it's a Taf. Meaning you take the first letter, and it corresponds to the last letter. The second letter of the alphabet corresponds the second to the last letter. The third letter corresponds to the third to the last letter. At, bash, gar, dak, hat, vav, so on and so forth. There's a system called atbash. I didn't make it up. It was ready from the times of the Gemara. The Kabbalah talks about this all the time. Ketoret in the morning. Vidui in the morning. Yeah, that's correct. Where did you learn that from? From here, I told it to you. Now watch. Watch what it says. If you take the word shekel, sheen kof lamed, but let's make the word shekel into the atbas system. The sheen is the second to the last letter of the alphabet. That corresponds to the second letter of the alphabet, which is a bet. Kof. Well, kof is the fourth to the end, corresponds the letter Dalid. And the Lamid represents the letter Chaf, right in the middle. That means Shekel and Atbash is the three letters, Dalid, Bet, Chaf. Dalid is 4, Bet is 2, which is 6, and Chaf is 20. 26. Shekel and Atbash equals 26, which is Yudke Vavke. God says, you have to have Emunah. You know what the Emunah is? Mahasita Shekel. Half of God's name. Which means half of the 26. Only the first two letters. The reason why we gave the half is Shekel, because God's telling us, in this world you only understand half of the holy name of God. You only understand Yudke, Yismi'u Shamayim. In your brain you say, God understands it, but I'm not happy. The other half is Shekel is when Mashiach comes. That's V'tagil Ha'aretz. Mahasita Shekel, according to the student of Rabbeinu Ari, he's telling us, it's really half of Hashem's name. And that's the Adanim, that's the foundation of the Mishkan. If we would live forever, we would have no questions. Rabbeinu Ari writes, Dor Holech V'dor Ba. A generation leaves us, and a new generation comes. You know how Rabbeinu Ari said it? The generation that left is the same generation that comes back. Dor holech ve'dor ba, it's the same people. Gilgul. Sometimes people have to come back, and therefore what's happening to a person now is to fix something that happened the last round or the round before that. Dor holech ve'dor ba, which opens up a whole other subject of how to understand the ways of God. And it's not, you don't have to think about it. It's not my job to say what I was and what I know I'm now. I'm Rabbi Mansour. That's what I know at least now. I don't have to do what I have to do now according to this. Not worried. Maybe I was somebody else in the previous Gilgul. It's not for me to think of. But God knows what happened. God knows what's going on. And everything is correct. And everything is just. And that's what we say, and I'll conclude. El emunave en avil sadik v'yasharhu. God makes no injustices. Everything is v'sitkut. What a great Shabbat. This is the Shabbat of Shekalim. The Shabbat of Shekalim is the Shabbat. It's good. Simcha. It's music. It's beautiful. There's nothing wrong. It's the Simcha. That's what we're talking about. The Emunah brings us the Simcha. We have to dance from the Simcha of Emunah. That's the Simcha of Shabbat Shekalim. We announce the month of Adar, which is Simcha. We announce the Tirumah that was given to pay for the Emunah, for the basis, for Sadiq b'Emunato Yihyeh, Ba'habakuk v'amidam al-Achad. This should be a very, very good omen, Be'azat Hashem, for all of us. And Be'azat Hashem, there'll come a time where God is going to show us the other half of the shekel. That'll be at the end when everything becomes clear to us, like it says in the Pasuk, Lehagid Baboker Hasdecha, that the day will shine where everything will be seen as Chesed.